This is another episode of the Brothers Wisp. I have no idea what today is. I think it's late July. I have no idea what number this is. I've kind of given up on the number thing. We'll just number it post-production. But with us today is Alex. He's actually able to join us for once.
Hello.
Hello, Alex. We've got Mike Hammett. He's on the road, so hopefully he stays muted most of the time, which will be to everyone's benefit.
Hey.
There you go. We also have Thomas Kurdick. The amazing, beautiful, the bearded possible musketeer, Thomas Kurdick. And then with us as well today, a new cat we met at the MUM. Pretty sharp kid. It's got some interesting stuff to tell and maybe some ideas for you guys. Quincy Nolan. He's out of Northern Oklahoma, correct?
Yes, Enid, Oklahoma, or backwards, it's Dime. You can eat here, too. That's our joke.
Good times. You're going to fit right in with Andrew and his puns. So I guess today we're going to talk, a little bit about the Microtik change log or the Microtik novel that they put out. There's some interesting stuff, a little bit of scary stuff. But let's kick it off with Quincy here and just kind of talk about his entry into the Wisp world, as well as kind of some of the different things he's done. So when I was first introduced to Quincy, he seemed a little surprised to meet us in person, which I thought was cool. We are real people, and we do show up at the MUMs quite regularly, so always happy to meet viewers. You are the one guy that actually does watch the podcast, so there is somebody out there watching these. It's tremendous. What else can I say about you? You are North Oklahoma, like we said. You are mostly in the industrial commercial space, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, we work with a lot of industrial commercial clients, manufacturers, chemical manufacturers. I know we're in the middle of, you know, small town nowhere, but it's pretty cool. We get to do a lot of traveling and got a great group of guys that work with me. And we kind of have fun, sometimes in dangerous situations, but fun all together.
Gotcha. I work with Mike on a regular basis, so I know all about danger. So talking about when I first met you, one of the things that really intrigued me is you were talking about how you buy towers and you were kind of surprised why more people don't do it. And I thought that was really interesting. I never thought that that was even really an option for folks, right? And so most of the people listening to this are going to be in the Wisp industry, and I wonder if some of them have been kind of in the same boat. So tell me how you sort of stumbled on the idea of purchasing a tower, and what towers do you purchase?
Sure. Well, how I stumbled on the idea, years and years ago, I kind of mentored under like very old wireless guys. I'm talking two-way pager, two-way radio, those kind of guys. And I really liked it a lot. And we got in a situation where we inherited a part of a small Wisp that was created by a bank. Old Alvarion 900 equipment, Breeze used, and all those systems. And we kind of had the opportunity. There was a tower that they were on that wound up, no one knew who owned it. It was kind of out there. And so that was, I kind of did some research and found out that a lot of abandoned paging and two-way companies kind of in the Midwest, I'm kind of in the flat plains, the beginning of the plains. I just started reaching out and calling people and finding out there's just so many of these towers. Now, they're older towers. They can range from being built in between 79 to 80, 81, 82, 83. And so I just approached the landowner and then found out who was doing the maintenance on the tower and said, hey, this tower doesn't have tenants. You're not making any money. Let's make a deal and buy a tower. So there are a lot of those towers out there that people pass by every day as trying to get into the Wisp industry. And they don't think about it. They'll see a tower and they'll go like, wow, you know, I couldn't, you know, for some of the big guys are in that know those tower costs and pricing, like Mike and like Justin, you know, that deal on those big towers, they're available. And a lot of people don't realize, just go to whatever county it's in, go look up who the tower's registered, look on the, what is it, the FCC and the FAA, and approach those people. A lot of people think tower, you're going to have $85,000 to $100,000 to get a tower, build a tower, when there's some sitting there that are abandoned. You've got angry landowners. A lot of times the tower's been abandoned and resorted back to that farmer, and that farmer isn't going to fall that tower. It's too costly. A lot of times the towers are close to other things, and you don't want to drop them, and you'll wind up getting a tower for a couple grand. And when I say a couple grand, you can get a lot of those towers for anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000, all the way up to 10, a little bit better towers. Put a little money in it. If you're associated with some good tower companies, have them come out, do a structural survey on them, look at that tower. You may have to do some structural mods to get it back in shape based on the different wind load ratings, and then all of a sudden you've got a tower that's worth $50,000-$60,000, as in what it's going to provide to you in revenue, and also updating it to put other tenants on. So not only your gear, but there's a lot of other. I have my gear on a lot of my towers, but I also lease space out to other people, and that's a good way to kind of allow you some money to build towards some other resources. But you'll be surprised.
Sounds like you're double dipping, right? You're getting to use it for your own infrastructure, but you're also able to resell it. And I guess if you actually own the tower, you're going to have a little bit more control over what people are doing, right? So you can make people respect frequency ranges that they have to stick in and things like that if they're going to be on the tower.
Absolutely. You put it into the lease. And also, you'll be surprised. Now, you do have expense. A lot of times when you get these towers, you don't get the land around it. Of course, there's a land lease, but that landowner is just happy to get $100 a month. That tower's been sitting out there. There's been no maintenance on it. Grass has grown up all around the guide points, all around the shelters, and it's looking nice. He's getting a little money back for using the property, and it's a win-win situation for everybody. And
so you specifically said towers that were built, say, in the late 70s or early 80s. Is that kind of the sweet spot?
That's the sweet spot. Now, I'm going to probably sound a little unintelligent, but it's the old paging and two-way towers that are out there. They're usually towers that are not G-rated. Some of them are F-rated, and in that rating scale is the rating of how much load and what they're engineered. So you're not going to get your hands on a tower that's cellular rated. The big boys are never going to let those loose. You've got big companies like ATC, Crown Castle, SBA Towers, and them. They're going to maintain and keep those towers. But if you look around, they're usually red, white, striped towers. And another avenue, if you're in a wind energy area, a lot of times those wind energy companies don't want to take those original MET towers down, those meteorological towers. They're usually not very tall, 100 and 150 foot. They usually stand at 200 feet. They don't want to take them down. You can usually get your hands on those towers. Sometimes you can leave them there. Sometimes you have to go ahead and stack them out and move them someplace else. So that seems to be the sweet spot on a lot of towers.
So I find a tower that's built in 1980. I spend $3,000 to purchase it. How much on average would you say that you have to put in infrastructure-wise to get that guy back up? I'm guessing the shed on the ground, you're probably going to have to rebuild that. It's probably just gone to pot, right? The tower, are you going to have to redo any guy wires, you think?
And that's where it helps. I've got really good friends, close to friends in the industry, in the tower industry. One is one of the top three tower companies, servicing companies that work for Verizon and AT&T. They're in Oklahoma, and they're about 45 minutes down the road from me. And that's convenient. And I've learned a lot. That's where I learned a lot about tower safety. But yes, a lot of times you're going to have to have somebody come out and check the guide wires, make sure they're plumb and tensioned correctly. And also these older towers at the base of the tower, you want to check the weeping holes, make sure we don't have rust running through the legs, because you can run into some surprises on some towers and then end up having to spend some money to drop it. a lot of times the shelters, what I found on shelters is you can usually pick up really nice little portable buildings. There's usually already a concrete slab there. Knock the old building down, spend $500-$600 on little portable buildings, spray foam, insulate them, have an electrical company come out and update electrical. A lot of our sites will update multi-tenant electrical on them. And so it comes in handy. Now, to kind of avoid some of the conflict, I know I might be jumping around a little bit, but to avoid some of the conflict with other providers that are in the same industry, you'll be surprised how many low wattage radio stations, digital TV stations, John Deere, Agnet, and some of the others will lease that tower. Those towers are perfect for them. And so if you kind of don't want to lease out to someone that could be a potential competitor that'll wipe you out, there really is a smaller market. Your ham, your two-way people are always looking for towers. Get in the clubs, reach out, and, I'll say off script, usually if your tower's nice, let's say a nice, Garris tower, that's one of the styles of towers. I'm probably saying it wrong. Those towers average between 350 feet to 450 foot towers. You can pull some nice rental income and put it back into your business or other hobbies but they're available instead of trying to run out with a lot of expense, especially if you're starting a WISP and building towers and getting to the point, you're going to be leasing. In my area, you're leasing off of co-ops. You're attached to co-ops, steel legs, tops of buildings. Some rural water towers. We're fortunate the rural water districts around here work with a lot of people, and they're real gentle in allowing you. Just don't scratch the paint. Fix anything, don't weld on them, those rules. But a lot of our rural water districts aren't managed by larger leasing companies, because you get into city water towers and those things, and you have a pretty big leasing company that wants $2,500 for an application. But to round back to the towers, you'll be surprised. You can get into some towers affordable that give you great elevation and allow you – and, it's, of course, you have a tower – can play with. You can try new radios. You can try different things. Just remember safety first. I have to kind of plug that in, but absolutely, I hope I absolutely kind of answered a little bit on that.
So basically you're saying if you see a tower, don't necessarily think it's outside of your reach and
right
opportunities. And that was a really great point about you don't necessarily have to lease the rest of your tower to competition. There are other organizations, like you said, Farmers, John Deere. I've seen a lot of city utilization.
Yes.
Right? So they've got some fire stations they want to all light up, right? And they don't have fiber infrastructure. So it's a great jump off point.
And we do have a lot of rural fire stations that we provide some services to. We kind of do it free gratis because, in the Midwestern Plains, earlier this spring, we had horrible fires just in my area that burned all the way into Kansas, and they didn't think it was going to stop. So we try to take care of those guys.
Yeah, for sure. And, playing nice, I guess, with the municipalities is always a good idea.
Yes, very, very favorable.
Yeah, when you need, you need to be able to get on this water tower, you need right away through this easement. It usually, if you're friendly to the community, it's usually friendly back. So
And Greg, a lot of municipalities, you'll be surprised, their IT directors usually need a helping hand a lot of times. And there's usually, if you're a WISP operator or a consultant, that they're open to, you help them with a lot of advice on how to structure some of their city things. They're really open to pushing the city council to allow you on a lot of their structures.
Gotcha. Yeah, I always... at least our local municipalities and then some of the ones in Memphis, I always try and help, especially the nonprofit organizations in the area and things like that. I'm not seeing it necessarily come back favorably, but I'm assuming that if I just keep feeding in, something's going to come back at me. I know the local municipalities here have been trying to help those guys out. In a lot of our areas, especially when you hit rural areas like that, there's not a lot of IT folks, right? So
no.
You want to you want to make friends with the ones that are there. So if they are more familiar with some system, you know, you've got some quid pro quo. You can kind of ask for help whenever you need it too.
Gotcha. Oh, one quick thing I might throw in there, especially in the Midwestern region, you know, faster cable speeds. A lot of cable companies are now updating their head ends, going to fiber nodes and those kind of things. A lot of cable companies own towers and they want to get them off their books. They want to sell those assets off. And we just picked up an old cable head in. That tower is about 450 feet and it was actually pretty well maintained. We picked it up for under the price of a 1990 used Honda Accord. And it was already in really nice shape. But approach your cable companies. They actually have a pretty vast list of towers. And a lot of people don't think you walk in there and say, hey, who's the property manager? Who's the asset manager? Can I talk to them and open a dialogue? It's just, you know, you'll be surprised. And then it comes in pretty handy.
Yeah, so my wife always told me is it never hurts to ask. All they can say is no, right?
So right.
Just ask them and see what they have to say. That's cool. So I know you also deal a lot in the industrial, because I mean, we were talking about, well, here, let me kind of backtrack a little bit, because I made notes when we kind of talked earlier. So one of the things you said is you learned from the old timers about your area. We're talking about how you get some really severe weather. For those not familiar with sort of Oklahoma, that's Tornado Alley, right? So
right.
They're used to extreme temperature shifts. You were talking about 101 degrees down to 76 and, you know, just a matter of hours. And with that usually comes some very violent storms or weather. And you were saying that you learned special ways to attach your equipment to the towers, right?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but go spend a little money on small braided steel cable. And some I call them some clamp hasps, and just like when you're tower climbing, you've got tool lanyards. A lot of people don't think about attaching lanyards on equipment in high winds and those kind of things, because sometimes those mounts do give. We had some gear on a co-op that was literally anchored concrete into the concrete on some really good standoffs, and part of them twisted and broke off and the gear, but I had some lanyards on them, our homemade steel lanyards, and we weren't going to chase equipment in the field and some of the equipment, because some of our stuff is Microtech and we still kind of build out some of our radio boxes. I know I'm going to get chastised, but I learned from the old school, the Microtech, even Ubiquiti's new to me. And yeah, it's pretty new to me in the residential side. And I've learned, and you can never have enough grounding, you know. So a lot of people don't think, you know, remember to tape up your connections and those kind of little things that people don't think about. But especially in the wind, I've had one of our Microtech, 2.5-foot dishes that we had a Net Metal 5 connected to. It got pushed off. We had a wind gust 75 to about 80 miles per hour, and it got pushed off the side. I mean, it twisted the mount, but there it is dangling. I mean, the dish is kind of banged up a little bit, but you know what? We're able to get it mounted back up and at least get the customer up, because the majority of our customers, as you know, Greg, are commercial versus we're just now entering the residential market. So, and our customers, they get a little... get a little pushy at times, our commercial customers. We love them to death. You know, yeah. I'm going to say that just in case they're watching.
Yeah,
but
commercial,
you know, they
comes with an SLA, right? So
yes, yes.
How you relate it to me is we put a steel cable on it. That way we're not looking for it in a 2-square-mile radius.
Yes.
It put it into perspective how violent your winds are when you're, you know, you're on a scavenger hunt trying to find equipment that got yanked off a tower. So when I was at the Grizzlies, anything – inside the arena that was hung up, you know, if it was bolted twice, they still had a steel cable going to it, just in case, right? If somebody's underneath, you got to make sure it doesn't bonk them in the head. So I don't see why that wouldn't translate to the outside just as well. So one of the things you're saying that you do in the industrial environment, you're pretty much a jack of all trades. You're doing SCADA acquisition, networks inside of different, I don't know how, you know, just large commercial organizations. I didn't know how deep you wanted to get into that, but you were talking about that you go all the way down into some flight access control systems and some camera systems as well. So it sounds like you very much got the WISP mentality down. You're just now starting to get to the residential side, right? It's anything that people will pay me to do, which I think is really awesome.
Well, that's kind of there's a group behind me. There's other guys behind me, and we're a group of, you know, almost 20 years in the industry. And we all came from kind of perspective. We had the standard PC tech repair company, and I kicked off my original company in 99 and burned out. I was like, if I see one more PC, one more laptop, that's you know, I'll hook up one more printer. And so we started changing the direction and approaching those customers that were doing regular, I guess, client or desktop support and saying, hey, there's a lot more we can do. And then I started bringing other teams of guys on and kind of steered away from that direction and work with clients. And I'm not sure if I can say one of our biggest clients on the air. So I'm going to be careful to say that they produce paper, they produce fertilizer products. What's one of their other big products? Oh, they produce connectors and cables and things that make everyday life. And we got in with them, and then that opened the door. They referred us to a lot of other clients, and we enjoy it. We get to go to some places, some different places in the United States, and travel for them. And then, like I said, they open their doors up to other. The others. So I kind of have to, sorry, I have to be a little edited.
No, that's fine.
On who I can talk about and who I can't.
You're just Thomas Jr. over there. He's always working on some top secret project nobody can talk about. So he's super boring. It's like, oh, you got another thing you can't talk about? Why aren't you talking to me at all, Thomas?
Right.
You're killing me.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks.
No, but just as an aside, we'll put links up to Quincy's companies, you guys can throw your cash at them.
Well, you know, do not criticize or throw fun at my website. We've never delved into the web. I probably need to have someone update our website. The one thing we don't do, we're not a web and code kind of. I'm kind of basic about that. We
You're
say
making
what we
money
need to
without
say.
Updating the website, though, right?
Right. We just started a social media page, and then I said, you know what? We feel that some of our clients, that would make them nervous that we have a social media outlet, so I kind of muted it. It's just got some old pictures and those kind of things on it. So I was worried I was going to be critiqued by maybe Mike or some of the other people. Or you don't have a website. Well, we have a website, but it's not slick and pretty and those kind of things.
Well, to me, if you're going like gangbusters and you don't have time to make a website, what's the point? You're doing all right.
Yeah, because
if you're going just as fast as you possibly can, I wouldn't sweat it.
Right. Most people reach out to us. We're old school, phone and email. We have somebody that answers the phones, and phone and old school.
That's good, man. All right. So, is this a good time to transition and talk about a little bit of actual equipment and some gear and stuff like that? Everybody.
I think so. I want to learn some stuff. I'm taking all kind of notes.
I know. Also, Quincy's got an engagement to get to, so I don't want to hold him up too long. But I think everybody can tell Quincy can talk, but he's got stuff to talk about, so it's good.
So sorry, give the gab.
You're right. I wish I had it. You're a born salesman. All right. So I'm looking at this Microtik change log, and it's as long as my arm, which is amazing. So it's was that 636 popped out. July 20th, yeah. So just a few days ago. Let's see, what do we have? Did you guys see, I know the firewall, the interface list option where you can have a list of interfaces and you utilize those in firewall rules, right? So for matching inbound and outbound, you can just now use a list of interfaces instead of having to create so many multiple rules that specify this interface in or out. That was a really cool one, and I know everybody's been waiting on that one. Anything particular that you guys know of that you saw in there that you appreciated? I appreciate the transparency that's in there now.
I just kind of found it funny that 36 has been released 2 days ago and there is already RC5 of 37.
So are you insinuating they found some bugs? Is that what you're going with?
I am not sure, but it's kind of just funny that 2 days after release there is already RC5 of the other version.
For sure, for sure. Well, I mean, there's a pretty good chunk. Well, a good chunk of fixes. I didn't see a whole lot.
Another thing
of
I noticed,
new additions.
They added ARM support for the Dude server. So if you're rocking the 3011, you can actually drop the Dude in a remote site. It's kind of cool.
It is cool. And they're actually linking to forum posts for changes, which I think is interesting, right? So I guess some changes were discussed on the forum
for
that was brought up.
Dude, it was like that actually since the the release of the new Dude, I guess you could say. So since they started working on it, it's always been just a link to particular forum posts because they discussed changes in there. And
why reinvent the wheel? That's a good point. They said that they slimmed down the Dude server package and made it a little bit smaller and cleaner. I don't know how much smaller. I haven't bothered to look. Let's see. Wireless FastPath is discontinued. It needs to be uninstalled, disabled before upgrade, which makes me want to enable it and then upgrade with it, you know, not disabled to see what happens.
Actually, if you upgrade through the internal upgrade system, so you don't manually put the upgrade package in there, it will actually sort it out itself.
Huh, fair enough. So if it's discontinued, I guess that just means they rolled the features into the main train. Is that the idea?
So actually in the 37 release, and you can already see this in the 637 RC, all the other wireless packages are completely discontinued, and just the new wireless rep package is just now renamed to wireless, and that's the only wireless package from 37 and onwards.
Right.
Cool.
They've been working for a while to add a lot of new features. And
oh, wow.
Careful to put it back in the old versions. What's that?
You're a robot. That was cool. ARM, fixed kernel, failure on low memory. Yeah, so it seems like there's a lot of bug fixes.
The one really good thing, which I really applaud MikroTik for finally after all the years doing, is that they implemented proper L2 MTU on the bonding interfaces, which is a big, big change.
Gotcha. That's cool. That's cool. Implemented L2 MTU value equals smallest slave interfaces. Gotcha.
It's going to fix so many issues that there were with the bonding interface. And it's actually this singular issue has been why we have completely stopped using bonding on MikroTik. Because
so
it costs...
Explain to me what it is. Is that where it takes the actual physical interfaces and the lowest MTU, it will apply that to the bonding interface?
Yes. So previously, actually, what was happening is that the bonding interface had no L2 MTU. And that was a big issue, right? Because so on MikroTik, obviously you have maximum L2 MTU, and then you have your configured L2 MTU, or you have absolutely no L2 MTU, like it was with bonding. So what happened actually up until this date was that for the L2 MTU of the bonding interface, it was equal to the L3 MTU of the bonding interface. Which is a big problem if you are doing like PPPoE or MPLS and VPLS on top of that particular bonding interface. So it just made things very, very unusable with the bonding interface without being able to do larger and L2 MTU than L3 MTU. So with this fix, actually, it opens many features which were previously not usable on bonding at all due to the missing support for L2 MTU.
So you're talking about the issues with, say, MPLS, VPLS, things like that. It beyond the, say, the routing interface is 1500, these are going to add additional portions to the headers, right? Which is going to increase
it beyond,
and then plop, everything starts getting dropped, and you just have problems. It's awesome. also see bonding fixed crash on Raman traffic transmit. That's kind of annoying, I can imagine. A lot of different certificate stuff in there. CHR, fixed crash.
I forget, they also allow you to add domain names directly to address lists now, and it will resolve and keep those lists up to date, rather than having to have a script that resolves DNS and adds an IP to the list. So your firewall, not only do you benefit from the interface list, but you benefit from being able to add domain names directly to the list now.
That's right, because you, Alex and Thomas, were both testing that together, right?
Right.
Yeah,
we tested it quite roughly.
Actually,
about a month
impressed,
ago.
Right? I mean,
yeah, everything
things
works.
I was like, oh, I bet this doesn't work. We're going to prove like, oh, it works. Wow.
Does this work? No, but it's not going to work. Yeah, so what was it? Regular A records, I think when you had a low TTL value, that worked, right? And then
yeah.
What else?
Fresh
did you find?
Having multiple entries, using C names, yeah.
Yeah, everything worked. And transitions from a non-existent record to an existent record, multiple IP addresses, everything just worked. So it's really nice to see a good feature that is really useful and that works completely.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that as well. Let's see. A couple of clock fixes on different router models. Some console updates. It says default configuration. Change channel extension to 2040/80 for all AC boards.
There is also a bunch of IPsec fixes, which I am really glad for. Every time I see an IPsec fix in RouterOS, I am really happy about that. But I know that one particular person has an issue with one fix not being in there.
Yep, there's definitely an IPsec hardware driver issue on the tile. And that fix isn't in here yet. I'm told it'll be in version 6, but I haven't heard a specific date on when the new driver will be out.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that they didn't say version 7 is promising, because that's been the answer to so many questions, is version 7, version 7.
Right.
So I guess they recognize that it's something of a showstopper for you, and hopefully they'll address that. Yeah, that's probably 10 or 15 IPsec fixes that they've done, which is really interesting. Let's see, a whole lot of LTE additions. I'm guessing it looks like it's mostly support for new adapters. Mike was trying to get them to add a new adapter in there. I wonder if they added it. Let's see, some modem support. I didn't realize people were still using modems that heavily with MikroTiks. MTU adjustment.
Oh, Greg, I'll answer that. We still in the oil field and the SCADA side, they still use modems. There's so many out there that are still using modems.
Yeah, what is it? We've got several petroleum companies. I can't talk about who they are, but one
right.
of them in particular has. I think they're pulling in 13 or 14 phone lines from us just to be able to dial out as a backup to that SCADA, to that weird SCADA gear. I mean, their primary are T1s, so you know they're rocking and rolling, but they back up to dial up modems. You know, I mean, if it works, it works. I guess you do what you got to do. Let's see, SNMP fixed a lot of different stuff in there. Some crashes.
Yes, finally. So. There were issues, right, with current bugfix 634. There are issues with SNMP where it replies with wrong interface indexes in the interface table, which is a really huge, huge issue because
yeah.
your IP addresses show on wrong interfaces over SNMP. And in 635, there is an issue where it doesn't report certain health OIDs for certain boards. So it would not report health information, and it would not report what's even a bigger issue for me, the router boot, the firmware status. So 634 has SNMP bugs and 635 has SNMP bugs. So I am really hoping that now that 636 is finally out, and I've actually had a few tickets with MikroTik and I've tested the RCs and they finally fixed all of these issues with SNMP. So I am really hoping that 636 will be nice and stable and have finally all of the SNMP stuff working as it should.
Right.
That's awesome. I see a whole bunch of Winbox updates, mostly, do not show this, do not show that. So it looks like just a lot of cleanup in there. And then some of the wireless rep fixing some of that stuff. Have you guys actually tried the wireless rep package yet?
I'm using it.
Are you actually using it as a repeater?
No, just being able to take advantage of some of the background scanning and things like that that they added.
That's cool. It's a good success.
Yeah. I've primarily used other vendors for wireless in the past, so I'm kind of new to the MikroTik wireless. And there are some things that are not as straightforward as I would expect, but
gotcha. We'll see what happens. Navigating the interface, you can always talk to Tom. He's an expert on it. Loves it. Big fan. I'm actually glad he's not here to hear you say that, because we don't have that much time left. So that's interesting. Do you guys have any other major points you want to talk about? Otherwise, we need to get Quincy out of here. No?
Well, okay.
I have a few questions you guys are got the Brothers Wisp group.
Yeah.
One of my questions, we're kind of noobs, wrapping our head around kind of playing with Capsmin a little bit. What is the primary purpose of that? I set up the kind of demos that I found on the web, and we set up a little lab to play with. What is the benefit of using that setting and pushing out those different configurations and SSIDs out to the other devices that are talking back to that?
Well, Capsmin is the unify killer, right, guys?
Yeah, so Capsmin is a centralized controller for all of your wireless. Being able to manage the configuration for multiple routers and access points from one spot is really handy. Ubiquiti's had that for a long time with their Unify system. And, you know, it might not seem that helpful if you just have maybe one or two or three access points, but when you start talking about multiple sites and, you know, maybe a single location has 20 access points or something, not having to go around and make changes on every access point, making sure that the SSIDs are in sync and the passwords are set up the way you want them and all that. Like, well,
Capsmin, though, it's not really a WISP product, right? It's more like an enterprise wireless or
right,
like a municipal gotcha. Wireless sort of thing. Yeah, because it's really made to... if I have like an office building with a whole lot of APs, I can quickly adjust the encryption keys or change new SSIDs, things like that, right?
So right.
Not necessarily right. Per tower where you need really granular control.
Okay. Because a quick example, we have a couple places. We probably have about 50 total unified APs out in different ordered, you know, different numerical groups at different client locations. But I kind of had a brief conversation with Greg about this. In our commercial sites, all our access points for our different areas are all MikroTik access points for our different various networks. And that's why I was kind of interested. But I guess I'm really struggling with, I guess it's not slick and cool in a way. So I've just kind of, I've reached out to someone.
It's in not this group a nice say, just looking user friendly setup that you would expect to see from like Ubiquiti. But it's a step forward for MikroTik, where before that you're having to manage every single device manually.
Right.
Or find a way to script it or, you know, do things like that. But
it also actually adds a bit of functionality which was not available before with MikroTik at all, which is local forwarding and remote forwarding.
Right.
Of course, yeah. You could still do it with MikroTik using tunnels and different other methods, but having local and remote forwarding available inside of Capsmin is actually a big help, and it's actually been one of the main reasons why I deployed Capsmin personally.
Explain it. Right. Explain it like I was three. So that everybody can understand what that means.
So, usually when you have a big network, right? Or does somebody else want to explain it? I don't know if I'm able to explain this to
a friend. I have a I just set up Capcan for a network for a company. They've got a small office building. They needed three APs to cover all the areas they wanted wireless in. For having their secure network, their trusted network for all their company computers and things, it's not that big of a deal. You just throw them on the main VLAN. But with the guest network, you don't want them to see anything, touch anything, and being able to use the tunneling that's built into Capspan, you just say all the guest traffic goes back to the main router, and then you can deal with the firewall rules and disabling services and everything on that one router rather than having to deal with turning off your services and Mac Telnet and everything on every single device that's on that layer 2 domain. It tunnels all that back to one central location.
What kind of plan are you using for that?
So usually it's very useful for branch offices, right? When you, sorry about that. When you have like a headquarters company or a main building, main site for a company, and you have many branch offices, you don't necessarily want all that traffic from some SSIDs to be handled locally. You just want it to be tunneled automatically, independently through Capspan to the main building or main subnet somewhere. So it can basically do transparent layer 2 tunneling all the way to the controller, or it can handle that layer 2 and forward that layer 2 on that particular device, which is the actual access point.
Gotcha. So Alex's case is tunnel all the untrusted traffic back to the router, and then Thomas's use case is, say you have multiple satellite connections, the I guess secured information could be tunneled back to the main site.
And the only thing to answer your question, I'm not sure exactly what they're using, but I know that they're using UDP to forward that traffic along, and they do make it clear in their wiki that it's not encrypted at all, so you'd want to be careful not to send clear text important things out over the internet using that tunnel. But
it basically tags along the management connection, somehow tunnels it.
Well, see, that's so insightful on my end, because I have clients that most of their Cisco guys are comfortable, or their infrastructure teams are usually Cisco guys, and they're very comfortable with MikroTik for some reason, but they're untrusting with the pretty slick green rings. I don't want to say anything bad about anybody. However, they've said, well, give us an alternative to our Cisco WAPs that are out there. And I did that by starting to put the MikroTik APs, mounted ceiling mounts, real slick. They like the fact that it's, they can see it on when they look into some of their core switches, it's discoverable and those kind of things. They're, for some reason, they're comfortable there, but they're not comfortable. But now they're reaching out and asking for other features. And Greg at MUM, one of our largest clients, one of their head of their infrastructure was a really tall guy that was talking to you, that was tagged along with me. And I have to keep his name off this cast.
For sure.
However, he worked to vet MikroTik into that company, but now they're asking, well, can it do this and can it do that? And that's why we were kind of looking at Capspan. But I'm kind of a rookie on that portion of it. But that's the solution they're looking for, to give them the same flexibility that they had with those using those Cisco WAPs with a lower entry point, but still been able to tunnel and tag and that's real insightful. I had no idea that Capspan had that ability. Well,
yeah, it does. It's not going to look as clean and user-friendly as say a UniFi or even a Cisco controller, right? If you're familiar with those, it's going to be different. It's more like logging straight into a MikroTik router and doing configurations.
So also there is one other thing which Capspan is I guess a future investment for MikroTik as well. Because if you want to do technologies like .11R, which is the actual roaming standard extension to the wireless standards, then you have to have a central intelligence, a central controller. So without a thing like Capsman, MikroTik even wouldn't be able to do .11R at all, which is definitely a wanted and good feature to have. Just for that, you already need some kind of a controller. So I would guess Capsman is also a investment in the future. And as we can see, it's been properly maintained. And through all of the Capsman 1 and Capsman 2 and different wireless packages, it's been, you know, MikroTik has been putting some development time and resources into it. So I would guess that it's also a investment for the future.
I wouldn't be surprised, too, if they started... I kind of want to say they said something about this, but I wouldn't be surprised if they started adding additional configuration options that you can do with Capsman outside of the wireless. So manage all of your routers, let's say, from a central location. Maybe you want to, you know, manage system settings or firewall or handling wired interfaces. Maybe you could do some tunneling that way rather than setting up, you know, your conventional tunnels manually. I don't know.
Would that make it kind of a Meraki kind of style heading towards?
When I hear about that, I'm just afraid it's going to turn up you guys know there is a little nickname for a particular, I don't know if you guys know, but there is a little nickname for a particular functionality, which is called a quick fuck button. you might want to cut that out of the cast, but I'm just...
Classic.
I love it.
I'm just very afraid it's going to turn out the same way as the quick fuck button currently turned out. So
we'll see. Time will tell. Some things are amazing. Maybe they'll ease into it, and it'll just continue to kind of organically grow in the right direction, as opposed to.
Well, that's the first time I've heard that, Thomas, because when we were setting up, all of our residential customers get a MikroTik small router. And the installer sometimes will hit that button inadvertently and all the settings just disappear and it does weird things and it takes us forever to figure out what exactly happened from clicking one button.
And that's why it's called Quick Fuck.
I love it.
Oh, God. All right. All right, so do you have any other specific questions, Quincy?
Oh, I've got millions of them, but I don't want to take the show. I could ask questions, and I'm telling you, I've been watching you guys for a long time, and I'm just always just writing things down. I'm like, oh, well, I've got a question for Justin, and then I've got a question for you, and I've got tons of questions for Tom, and I want to get more information from Alex about some things. Oh yeah, I could ask questions all day long.
All right. Well, let me wrap it up here because I'm trying to be sensitive. I know you said 7:30, and so I'm trying to get you out of here. Alex, do you have anything new or interesting coming up in the pipe? Anything you're working on that you can actually share? Because I know Alex works in kind of a closed environment too, and he can't share a whole lot about what he's doing.
No, I just say that I'm excited for the new MikroTik AC stuff to actually clear the FCC, and that'll make some projects easier.
Yeah, I saw some vendor with a very optimistic quote of end of July on that. I seriously doubt it's going to happen, but who knows?
I'm in the same boat as you. We'll see.
All right. Thomas, is there anything that you can talk about from the public-facing front? I know you've been updating us with change information on Unimus a whole lot. You just keep popping out new updates very rapidly.
So it's what I've been mostly focusing on this past couple of weeks and months. So there is actually more Unimus. There is a new release coming next week that's going to add some nice features, mainly all kinds of imports. So finally, you will be able to add 3,000-4,000 devices with one click into it. But it's just been Unimus all the way lately. So.
That's bananas. And I know Mike was saying that he was about to put it to the test because he had something tank, and he's been running the beta version of Unimus. So it's, I'm sure he'll report back that everything went successful.
Did he drop out? Because I enjoy, like, I'm on one. I do use Facebook, and I'm on one of the little, I guess, groups on Facebook, and I follow a lot of Mike's comments on a lot of stuff.
Right, so 99% of the, virtually all of the Facebook front of the Brothers Wisp is Mike constantly pumping out material. If it was left up to me, you would be one post every 3 weeks or one post every time we make one of these. So it's, if you're looking at Facebook, that's Mike. Occasionally the rest of us will pop in and comment, but that's about it.
Gotcha. Because he says a lot of times what I'm thinking in my head about certain things he posted on Facebook.
Yeah.
So I like it.
Mike, I'm not sure if he has a filter or if it's just extremely porous, because pretty much anything that pops in his head immediately explodes onto the screen. So there's very little quality control on his statements, which I like. I like that because, you know, somebody's got to be insane. It's not going to be me. So, Quincy, is there any new projects, anything kind of interesting that you're looking forward to in the near future?
I can kind of talk about one. It's from a safety standard aspect for commercial clients. It has to do with the evacuation and accountability. Essentially, you have to evacuate a location to mustering points. Let's just use the word mustering, and we're doing some things that involve microtech, cellular, some sensors, and some accountability, and we're pretty excited about that. And the core piece is some microtech router boards in there that are working, and It's pretty cool. We're pretty excited. We're commissioned by one of our clients to we kind of did a demo unit for them a while back, about 6-8 months ago. And for whatever happens, you know how the corporate world is. I think they call it that solution didn't work. Let's go back to this one. And so they woke our project up. So we're pretty excited about it. And it's a low cost thing that can be used anywhere. I'm talking at a construction site where there's hazardous materials and everybody needs to evacuate way away. And we're going to still tie it into their corporate networks for monitoring and provide some monitoring tools. So we're pretty excited about it. And it retrofits to existing safety equipment. So.
Gotcha. Is this going to turn into a commercial product that we're going to see you hawking on infomercials at night?
You know, I you may see me on Shark Tank.
That's cool, man. That's very cool.
We want to keep it low cost. I really want to do something that will provide a lot of safety. A lot of companies don't afford safety equipment or kind of go secondhand when it's safety and just kind of squeak by. And I've seen it a lot in the oil and gas industry, and I want people to be safe. I really do.
That's cool. All right. So I haven't been working on a whole lot, just trying to basically stay afloat lately. Is there anything interesting I'm working on? I was thinking of DDoS mitigation in the cloud with like an AWS, you know, kind of some sort of automated system that would, you run like a cloud hosted router out in AWS, and then you actually get hit, then you shift all your routing out there. I was going to see how feasible that is. I'm pretty sure AWS doesn't like it when you do things like that, but you could probably, I guess, keep making new accounts as they ban you. I'm just curious to see how all that would work. And so I'm trying to put together, maybe I'll make that my next MUM presentation and say, don't do this because you'll get in trouble. But this is what it looks like when you do it. So that might be interesting. And then just looking at some other DDoS mitigation stuff, I'm probably going to end up trying out. I think that Andrea Soft WANguard, I'm probably going to try that out pretty soon, which seems fun. We'll see. Cool. Well, as always, if you have any questions or comments, you know, you can throw them on the YouTubes or the blog link, but probably the best, most active place is going to be Facebook, because Mike will immediately pick up on that and start talking back to you. He loves to meet new people, long walks on the beach, things like that. So be sure to reach out and let us know if you have anything interesting you'd like to see in the next show. Always love meeting new folks. Thank you so much for coming on, Quincy. You are a very enthusiastic person. Really love having kind of fresh new perspective we don't get a whole lot of people telling us to go buy towers. So that was.
Yeah, go buy towers.